The Anton Savage Show on News Talk.
I'm joined now by a man that you will know from 1917, Sherlock, Fleabag, Band of Brothers, Saving Private Ryan, that one sentence in Saving Private Ryan, All of Us Strangers, that one Flavin's ad from the 1980s, and of course the new production on Netflix of Ripley. He is the one and only Andrew Scott. Good morning, Andrew.
Good morning, Anton. How are you doing?
I am doing very well. I wanted to ask you, because you've talked a couple of times about how you originally got into acting, and the reason that you got into acting was to get past an introversion and a sort of a fear of speaking in public. And I was just looking back over the last couple of months of The Late Show with Stephen Colbert, The Late Late Show, Vanity Fair, BuzzFeed, BBC News, appearances at the Oxford Union. How's the whole speaking in public thing working out for you?
Yeah, how the worm has turned. Well, I suppose you just, what do you call that, exposure therapy.
Well, you see, I'm intrigued by this because I look at people, you know, with Robert De Niro, where Robert De Niro is very good when you put a camera on him, but if you put him on a talk show, you need somebody else beside him to do the talking bit. You seem to have managed to deliver both simultaneously.
Yeah, it's an interesting thing, isn't it? It depends. It depends on your own kind of comfort level, I think. It was something like when I was a kid, I was very shy. When I was a kid, I just, you know, and I think, you know, shyness can grip us all at times, even still it does. And, you know, sometimes you feel more capable of doing those things than others. I suppose it's just practicing and, you know, understanding really that, people don't mind. I always say this in the theater when actors make mistakes. You drop a line or something, and everybody's like, "Oh my god, that's the worst thing that could ever happen." But actually, what sometimes happens in the theater is that the audience become really aware that it's a live situation, that there's a human being up there, and they become more impressed that and reminded certainly that that they've remembered the rest of the lines. So actually, it can. Being vulnerable or being a bit nervous or something, I think sometimes connects people to the audience. You don't just have to present particularly in this, you know, media age where everybody presents a sort of very perfect image of themselves. I think to be a little bit vulnerable or a little bit, you know, to make a mistake or to be a little bit nervous is no big thing. And I think when I realized that, it made things a little bit easier for me, you know.
Talk to me about how you manage that whole media age bit of things, though, because you have gone in the last couple of years from very successful actor to very successful, very famous actor. That has implications. It has opportunities because you are now a brand what can sell yourselves to even bigger products than Flavin's, if that was the way that you wanted to go. Has that been tricky to navigate?
You know what? It's something that one thinks about, and it's definitely something that I have a fear about. I would never think of myself as a brand. Maybe I should bring out my own bed linen. Would you buy it, Anton?
Oh, my God, of course. Sign me up for the first consignment. I'm not sure it's the most profitable of things that we can commercialize. But
I'm an artist. No, I'm not interested in profit. I'm interested in good Egyptian cotton. Maybe some Irish cotton.
Oh, you're the Paul Costello of Netflix. That's how we will know you henceforth.
Well, there's a compliment and a half. But no, you sort of, I think you can control it to a certain degree. I'm really interested in, I still love acting. And so I want to be able to do that as much as I can. And also, you know, one of the things that's important to me, I think maybe it's something to do with being Irish as well, is I still want to be able to connect with people on a day-to-day basis. I don't want to live in a sort of glass house or like behind like gates and where people become the enemy, you know, and you go, oh my god, here's somebody else. And that can happen, I think, when you're very, very, very famous. It's just everybody has they're taught to have a certain reaction towards you, and I don't really want that. And I think the way that you do that is by not exposing yourself too much, and you know having a public Instagram profile, and it could just be just an imbalance in what you have for yourself. And so, you know, you just have to be a little bit careful of that. And I still want to be able to connect with people, because that's the greatest thing that for me that you can do in your life, is to be able to observe as well as be observed. And I try not to think about it too much. One becomes a little bit more aware of it when you're doing press, and obviously That's what I've been doing a lot for the past, with All of Us Strangers and, you know, Vanya the show, and now with Ripley. So I've done a lot of it recently. So, you know, it's an ebb and flow kind of thing. After a while, after this, I'll I'll be doing a little less talking about myself.
Is it easier to do being Irish in Ireland? Because, I mean, we tell ourselves that we are very respectful of the famous and that we leave them alone, that we don't annoy them. Is that true?
I think it is true. I think it is true. Yeah, it's certainly my experience. I mean, there's always exceptions.
It's the hot priest across the street, did you, have you?
maybe a little bit. Not really, though. Last time I was in Dublin, when Paul and I were launching All of Us Strangers, we went out for a couple of nights, and that was maybe a little... That was a lot. That's a lot. But, you know, then after a while, we had it was manageable. But, you know, like, it's also really nice, you know, it's completely manageable. And, yeah, you just try not to think about it too much. I think you just try not to think about it too much.
Although that's interesting, I think, with you, because I get the sense whenever I have listened to you or read what you have said, I think you are a thinker, particularly when it comes to acting. I think you reflect on it a lot. You contemplate, you think about it a lot. It is not something where you just say, I'll close my eyes and do it.
No, I don't mean this to sound lofty or anything, but it's really saved my life, acting, you know. I was shy, and it gave me something, I have an enormous amount of respect for it, and I think it's a very cathartic thing for me to do, and I feel like it's an honorable thing to do with your life, you know, to try and imagine what it's like to be somebody else. And so you want to tell the truth. That's what you want to do. You want to go, well, what would that person think? So when you're playing a character like Tom Ripley, who's such a famous literary character, and I've been very lucky in the sense that I've played characters before that people have preconceived notions about, like Hamlet or James Moriarty, the big sort of literary figures. And your job is to think, well, what's my view of that? And what's the truth that I can see behind that? And, I find that endlessly fascinating. I still have a great passion for acting and characters and the way people present themselves as opposed to what they're feeling underneath. And that's endlessly fascinating. The way people construct a sentence, I think, is fascinating. Language and the way that people look, and, you know, their physicality. There's so many different things that you can decode people by.
In that context, why did you not enjoy the academia of acting?
Well, for me, it's playing. And actually not just for me. You play a part. I say that, you know, ad infinitum. And I think sometimes the academic or the research, even though it's very beneficial for people, it's not the first priority for acting. Your first priority for me as an actor is to be playful. You're required not to work a part, but to play a part. Your work is play. And so to be able to be instinctive and to be able to listen means you have to be really, really present-minded. And while you don't know what someone's going to say until they say it, that's what you have to make the illusion of. And it's the art of pretending that you don't know what you're going to say next when you absolutely do know, because you've read the script. And so you have to sort of in some way unknow everything. And that for me is about being completely alive in the same way that a child is. When you say to a child, okay, well, you're going to be the doctor and you're going to be somebody who's just come in and blah, blah, blah. And they go, okay. And they just think about it, because we're encouraged as children to use our imagination, and we have playgrounds for children. And as we move into adulthood, it's all about, you know, being sophisticated and presenting a sort of I know everything kind of thing. And so to use your imagination or to play actually becomes embarrassing for us. And I think the job of an actor is to be proud of that and to sort of say, well, my job is to keep that part of me, that sort of childish part of me, alive. So for that reason, like most children, I don't love academia.
You have been blessed, and no doubt because of the performances that you've delivered, one leading to the other, but you have been blessed with some of the great characters. I mean, you mentioned Hamlet, you mentioned Moriarty. Ripley is in that pantheon, I assume, because he is one of those ones where there is motivational layering as to why he is the way that he is, and there is such a level of badness that it must be joyful to play.
Yeah, it's incredibly enjoyable to play. There's no doubt that he's multifaceted, but it feels like it feels very singular as an experience playing Tom Ripley, because so much of the stuff is not actually about what he's feeling necessarily, but I think the pleasure for the audience is what he's thinking. And I think to see any talented person exhibit their talent with expertise is always really wonderful for an audience to watch. You know, I feel like they, to see him thinking on the spot, to see genius at work, he's, you know, he's the talented Mr. Ripley. I think that's the most fascinating thing about him. And I always say that he's not a natural born killer. I don't think we don't start the story thinking, okay, this person is bloodthirsty, or in fact, he finds blood kind of disgusting. So a lot of the stuff that he does is out of necessity. And I think that's why he's such an enduring character, because the audience feel like what it's like to be him, not to be a victim of him. They feel like, what would I do in this situation? And this version of the story really takes us through his thought process and his geographical journey and his psychological journey and his transformation. We spent a huge amount of time with him. So the challenge of it was, actually a lot of it was the stamina of just of doing 8.5 hours of television, which is like three movies with just a lot of the time just one character. So it was just a lot of acting.
But it does play to a lot of the, I mean, one of your great strengths, I think about the scenes in Fleabag, one of the things that you do so well, and as did Phoebe Waller-Bridge, the capacity to make a look say a multitude.
Yeah, well, that's how we communicate. You know, I don't know what the percentage is, but it's most of our communication is not verbal, it's physical. So yeah, we can pick, that's one of the wonderful things about acting, I find, is when I think the most boring acting is when somebody is saying exactly what they mean. I think with some things that we love to watch and the things that we observe at a dinner party, they were like, oh yeah, she was smiling, but there was something off with her, wasn't it? Did you notice that, you know? And so people are very, very sensitive to people's energy. And our energy comes mostly, I think, from just our physical behavior rather than what we say.
Before I let you go, Andrew, one thing that I'm curious about, is now a particularly good time to be an Irish actor in international productions? Because there is a clutch of actors. I mean, there's Fassbender, there's Mescal, there's Ronan, there's the Gleesons, there's yourself, there's Killian Murray, or Murphy rather. Does that mean more competition?
And sir, just to say about Saoirse and Ruth as well, and Alison Oliver and all those brilliant Irish women too, sometimes they're not mentioned. They're doing pretty damn well across the globe as well.
A fine point. Does that rise all boats, or does that create more competition?
Oh, no, there's no competition. In fact, it's completely the opposite. It's really, really wonderful. I'm so proud of that. I feel like it's a really small little country, and I feel so proud of that. And I hope it inspires that, you know, the next generation of Irish actors. You know, I think what's wonderful is when I was starting out, the idea of kind of making it in America or being part of these sort of international stories was really felt very far flung. And I hope for young Irish actors that are emerging now, that they can feel like, oh, I can do that, because, you know, if you see it, then you can believe it. And so, yeah, I hope that really happens. So there's absolutely no competition. I'm cheering on everybody. I was so just thrilled that Killian won the Oscar this year. I mean, what an extraordinary performance it was. And he's been giving such beautiful performances for so many years. We've worked together twice now, and I love him as a person. And I just feel so proud. And Paul, of course, is my great friend, and I'm so excited for everybody to see what he's going to do in the future. So I'm just very honored and grateful and proud to be associated with those people.
Andrew Scott, thank you very much.
The Anton Savage Show on News Talk.